This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Certain operas that rank among the favorites of opera goers around the world. Madama Butterfly is one of them. In fact, Butterfly ranks number one in Opera America's list of the 20 most performed operas. It features some of composer Giacomo Puccini's most highly charged emotional music to tell a story that involves love, passion, and the choice between living with disgrace and dying with honor. That may sound old-fashioned, but remember that the story of Madama Butterfly basically forms the foundation of the more contemporary musical, Miss Saigon. Well, opera lovers are in luck because Opera Carolina is about to open a new production of this classic, but with a twist. The sets and costumes have been reimagined by a Japanese-born sculptor whose work is also the subject of a new exhibit at the Mint Museum. We'll meet Jun Kaneko later in the program, but first, we welcome back James Mina, Opera Carolina's general director and principal conductor, who has brought with him Madama Butterfly's two leads. Una Lee is a lyric soprano who has been thrilling audiences around the world with her singing and performances. Though Korean-born, she is playing, I hope I say this right, Cha-Cha Sun,
yes,
in Butterfly. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Charlotte.
Thank you.
And Fernando Potari is also with us. He hails from Rio de Janeiro, has performed the world over, and joins this production in the role of American Naval Lieutenant B.F. Pinkerton. And I'm told this is your very first interview in English.
That's true.
Good luck to you.
Yes. I crossed the fingers.
Good luck to all of us, as a matter of fact. Welcome back, James. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Madama Butterfly, I'm told, is Puccini's favorite or most famous opera. Why?
Beats me. I have. Mike, if you had taken that survey, in fact, 20 years ago, the number one opera was Gounod's Faust. As far as the number of performances and audience response and those sorts of things, and we seem to have migrated or changed our tastes at the in the opera world, and gravitated more to Madama Butterfly. And
I think have we become more romantic?
I think very much so. You know, you look at the trends even in movies. And movies have, you know, there's always been the B movie, the, you know, the B love story kind of movie. But that has really kind of pervaded popular culture, you know, the chick flick, for lack of better words. And I think that has changed our sensibilities about stories. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, that's why Butterfly was successful and has been successful. Puccini, when he was arguing with the librettists about this story, he, I think, in a very basic level, understood that it had to be about her, because the original story was about American imperialism, and it was very anti-American. And Puccini understood that if he wrote that type of a piece, it would last maybe a decade. But the focus changing to Cho-Cho-San and her personal struggle and all of that made it more of a universal theme.
Well, as you just said, unlike most operas, this opera is all about her. She is, mm-hmm. Madame Butterfly is the show, and opera aficionados say that after a performance is over, you might ask about the tenor, excuse me, or some other player in the opera, but it really comes down to how she was,
yes,
how Madama Butterfly, and the role is described as a holy terror. Is it?
Holy terror.
Uh-huh.
That means your worst nightmare.
Right. Difficult.
Oh, that's right. Worst nightmare came true. Right. Yeah. So it shows the 3 years of my life as a teenager geisha, mm-hmm, to a mother and a betrayed woman. Yeah.
And you're on stage 80% of the opera.
True.
True. Yeah.
True.
But in terms of vocally, is it a really tough role vocally?
It's a marathon, and I have to be in the shape of, I think, a marathon runner, mm-hmm. because vocally it feels like singing La Bohème three times in one night.
True.
That's how
really.
That's how it feels to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of La Bohème, Rent is based on La Bohème.
Yes,
they
exactly.
even use a piece of music from La Bohème, which
absolutely.
Made the first time I saw the show, I laughed out loud when I heard that, because I thought, couldn't they at least be original and write something original? Why steal it whole cloth?
But, you know, Mike, these are universal themes about human right. passion mm-hmm. and human relationships.
So Rent is based on La Bohème. Miss mm-hmm. Saigon, as I said, is based on Madame a Butterfly. Has that helped operas like Madame Butterfly and La Bohème in terms of bringing in new audiences?
Yes and no. When we bring it to people's attention that the stories are timeless, and that, yes, the creators of Rent took the story of La Bohème and recrafted it, and the same thing with Miss Saigon, it does help, because it gives folks a reference immediately to what the stories of the opera are going to be. You know, we still fight these stereotypes that people think opera is this thing that's off-putting and not, you know, not for them. And when we can change that perception, when we can at least give them a reference to something that they relate to immediately, they come to the opera and they realize, oh, well, this is really, you know, a very enjoyable evening and hopefully a very moving evening for them musically and dramatically.
You know, when you say this is like singing La Bohème twice or three times in one night when you perform the role of Cha-Cha-San, is it because there's so much music for you to sing, or is it because the music that you have to sing is so difficult?
Both. Difficult emotionally. Because it develops, and I mean, she comes out as a happy geisha. I love singing the first act, because it's the only happy moment. And once I get the letter from Pinkerton, and the tragedy starts, and from then I still have another hour to sing, but I have to carry this emotion, sad emotion, until the moment I have to kill myself. So emotionally, very heavy, and a lot to sing, a lot of notes to sing too.
This is not the first time you've done this role. You've kind of cut your teeth on this role. You've made a name for yourself singing this role around the world. Why do you think your voice is so well suited to this? And your temperament, I suppose, is so, and your acting skills are so well suited to this?
I'm Korean. I grew up in Asia. So me being an Asian helps people see me as
matter of fact,
didn't
one of your teachers say to you, because you're Asian, you will play this role?
That's right. My teacher warned me when I was at school. Said, once you start singing this, well, you're going to be stuck with it in your career. So be careful and don't start too early. So I took his advice and waited until I turned a certain age, and I started, and he was right. So I have been sort of stuck, but happily stuck with this role.
I'm told, Fernando, that your very first opera performance was as Lieutenant Pinkerton.
It's true.
In this. Where was that?
It was in Rio. I was very young, and then I was used to be a lawyer. And then my father's is a singer. And for me, it's the first time that I sing in America. That's my debut in America now, here in Charlotte. And as a kid, I had so many dreams about America, because the teacher of my father lived in New York. He was a contemporary of Enrico Caruso. He also was from Napoli, and they were friends. But then he came to Brazil, because he married a Brazilian woman, and my father had this big opportunity to study with him in this very old Italian style. So to come to America for me was always in my dreams. And with this opera mostly, because this opera is the opera that I first started, and because of this opera I decided to become a singer. So there is many good reasons to be here.
So when you performed this the very first time in Rio, this was not in a professional company?
That's not in a professional company. It was a semi-professional company.
How do you go from being a lawyer to being a professional opera singer. That seems like a very divergent career path.
Yes. Yes.
depends what type of law he's practicing.
Yes. Well, I'm a son of an immigrant. Mm-hmm. I have one brother. My brother is a surgeon. He's a medic. Mm-hmm. A surgeon.
A doctor, yeah.
A doctor. And I am a lawyer. So the very established careers that we were prepared to do. But the passion of the music was very strong in my at home. My father is a singer and my mother is a pianist.
And you've performed together.
We performed together. Mm-hmm. The street tenors that came at home, it was for me 20 years before there was already the street. Every day we sang together. We came from the school. We sing together, me, my brother, and my father. Mm-hmm. Every single night before the supper, we sing together. So when came the street tenors, we said, oh, come on, we could get some money with this idea.
Mike Fernando calls the opera the virus.
You
were infected with the virus early on. It just took a while to take on.
I love opera singers. I have yet to meet an opera singer that is not fascinating. It's true. Although he's a lawyer, so when it came time to negotiate his contract, it must have been pretty tough.
Yeah, fortunately, I didn't have to negotiate with him. He has a manager who was much more reasonable to deal with.
Much more.
I'm told that, and I could be wrong about the number here, Una, but that this performance with Opera Carolina will be your 103rd?
I think so.
Is it your 103rd performance of this role or your 103rd professional performance?
Oh, of this role.
Of this role.
Yes.
How do you, that's another thing that fascinates me about opera. Occasionally, actors, either in straight plays or in musicals, will reprise a role because they were particularly good in it and people want to see them do it, so they'll come back and do it again. But opera singers have a repertoire of roles that they perform repeatedly. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it interesting to you?
I try, from the first day of rehearsal in any production, I try to forget about the past productions and try to approach as if it's the first time ever. And because I almost always have new singers to work with, and that makes it really easy to make it fresh because I have different relationships with different singers.
But there must be things that directors tell you to do or musical directors suggest that you do in the course of a previous production that you kind of like, and you'd like to do that again because it worked the first time.
Right. I discuss with the director and conductor, and if I can repeat that or, different people give me different ideas and inspiration.
You're nodding in agreement. Same thing for you?
Same thing. Same thing. That's true. And even more than in this production that is very, very unusual, it brings to another world. It's so beautiful. It's not realistic. Mm. And that's very close to the music of Puccini, who is very imagistic music. It gives you images.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the set later in the program with the set designer and the costume designer because the set is miraculous.
Yes.
It really is
amazing.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back more with Una Lee, Fernando Potari, and James Mina from Opera Carolina's production of Madama Butterfly, which opens at the Belk January 21st, 704-372-1000. Charlotte Talks on WFA. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting Love, Loss, and What I Wore, starring Loretta Swit, a comedy celebrating women's wardrobes and their lives, January 24th through 29th, McGlowan Theater. Tickets at 704-372-1000. Well, Republican presidential candidates have been campaigning and debating for months now, and now the primary or the preliminary voting has begun. First, the Iowa caucuses, then New Hampshire last night. Next, the rubber meets the road in South Carolina. The Palmetto State has traditionally been extremely important to the future success of GOP candidates, and this year is probably no exception. So we're going to focus on the South Carolina primary with area experts tomorrow at 9. We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, after New Hampshire, GOP rivals move on to South Carolina. Profiles of the big winners and key factors dividing them.
You can join that discussion on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon right after Charlotte Talks here on Listener Funded, 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
Some music from Madama Butterfly. That's Act Two when Pinkerton says farewell, I'm told, to his flowery refuge. We're talking to James Mina, who is the principal conductor and general director of Opera Carolina, about their upcoming production, which opens on January 21st and runs the 26th and 29th as well. Yuna Lee is with us, who plays Cha-Cha-San, and Fernando Potari, who plays Lieutenant Pinkerton. You mentioned, Fernando, that coming to America was kind of not necessarily a dream, but something you thought a lot about. Yeah. Young person, and you too, Yuna, mm-hmm. mentioned that you had a fascination growing up with American culture. So I'd like to hear from both of you. This is your American debut here,
yes.
in Charlotte, and you've played other places in America. I'd like to hear if the fantasy meets the reality.
For me, like in the opera or
in life?
In life. Well, maybe the American 70s, 80s, that was the fantasy that I had.
Ah.
Slightly different now. For me, America was the freedom and the Puritan-minded people, and that I see in the opera, Sharpless. Sharpless is the character and the dream that I had for American people. The good-minded, honest, sincere,
uh-huh.
not necessarily Pinkerton. Pinkerton is slightly...
Yeah, we'll talk about Pinkerton. Yeah, he's a cad.
Yeah. So that was my fantasy and growing up. Yeah.
Fernando, yours?
Well, it's a little bit different because I never lived in America. That's my first... I came just to visit America. Mm-hmm. So went to New York and go to the Met. But it's my first time that I work... And it's fascinating how it's so close still the idea of the country that receives all people from every culture and countries. For example, I'm a Brazilian.
Mm-hmm.
She's Korean.
Mm-hmm.
Maestro came from Greek and Lebanese roots. So still America gives this opportunity to talk through many, many points of view in life. And so I'm very excited to have this experience. In this way, I'm very happy because this brings, when you have a society that is a difference, that has many differences between them, it's more colorful. The colors that you bring to the show is more interesting colors. So I'm looking forward. I'm very happy to be here.
Madame Butterfly, has been described by some as being this tragic, fragile creature, and yet, and her name, her very name indicates fragility. But you have said that she is strong and brave. And resilient.
Mm-hmm.
How so?
Yeah, in the first act, she's disowned mm-hmm. by her family. She's 15, teenager. I have a stepdaughter who's 15 years old, so I know how strong she must have been. And then she goes on with her faith for 3 years because she's married to one person and she knows that's it for her life. And then she follows what her father did. You know, Harikiri, and strength and bravery. Yeah.
This story is based on a book that was written in 1898 and on a play that was written by David Belasco, right. Who was at the time a very famous impresario of theater in America back in the late 1800s.
Right.
And this came to be in 1904. So is it based on any fact or is it strictly fiction?
The John Luther Long story is based on an actual incident that was reported, I've forgotten the journal that it was reported in, of an arranged marriage gone bad, basically, in Japan between a naval lieutenant and a geisha. So it is based, in fact, loosely, of course. And then Luther Long wrote this this short story, which the perspective of which is very anti-American. The naval lieutenant, the naval lieutenant is very much your standard imperialistic, jingoistic kind of ugly American. Mm-hmm. And the geisha buys into the arranged marriage and is the victim continually. But she's not only the victim of her decision to stay and to wait for him, but she's also the victim of the choices that she makes. And as I said before, Mike, Puccini understood that if that was the story, if it was an anti-American kind of statement, that it would not have the universal themes that would make it a lasting and really an interesting evening in the theater. Puccini saw the play, the Belasco play, with Sarah Bernhardt, who really took this role of the Belasco play and made it her own. She reigned on for 20-some years. And Puccini really understood that it had to be about her. So the character in the opera is very different than the character in the play or the Luther Long. She is a much more, I guess, simple and very directed type of character.
And Puccini wrote several different versions of this between 1904 and 1907. Mm-hmm. I think the fifth version has become the standard version, but still people still perform other versions. Which one are you doing?
We're doing the final version, and the reason for that is Puccini argued with everybody, his librettists, with his publisher. They were the ones who were pushing him to make it more like the Belasco play, more like the Luther Long, make it more anti-American and keep those themes of cross-cultural conflicts. Mm-hmm. And why Puccini just said, no, I'm not doing that, I'm writing it this way, I can't tell you. But what we've ended up with is what he originally wanted.
Okay.
I want to add to that because sure. I've had a privilege to do the original version one time.
Oh.
There are necessary parts that was cut. But I missed this one scene in the third act when Sharpless offers me with money, and that shows the shallowness of Pinkerton. Mm. That breaks my heart, really.
Yeah. Speaking of Pinkerton, because Una has talked about the difficulty of playing her role because it's so locally strenuous. Pinkerton is an unlikable character in this play. He's been described by some as a loser. Even Placido Domingo, who has both sung the role and conducted the opera, says playing Pinkerton is difficult because it is almost impossible to find something positive about him. So talk about how you approach the role and how you feel.
Maestro Mina gave me a wonderful key. In the first rehearsal, he said, even it's a sad, tragic story. The beauty of the music must sustain this drama. So that was a wonderful key to trying to keep the freshness of the youth. The guy was very young. The lieutenant is very young, and he has this power of the youth, and he's really deep, felt deep in love with Butterfly. So it's very difficult not to.
So you're saying he's not necessarily a cad, which is a person
not necessarily.
Who sets out to
he's
do this
also a victim.
Yeah,
he's also a victim of the moment of his life, the moment of his culture, and the things that he had to do as a military, and the youth.
So you found good things in him. You found a way to play his innocence and the circumstances that he finds himself in his time and place.
What I think is that the mastery of the music of Puccini is that it keeps every character very, very human. Very human. There is nobody that is better than the others. Mm-hmm. Everybody suffers what they had to suffer. The characters are very close to everybody of us. Every one of us can have this identity with the character. So this story could pass in Brazil, in America, in Japan, in Africa, we have this key of the maestro was very important because keeps the beauty even in the drama and in the tragedy, the beauty not to fall in the
trap.
You mean that we think that, for example, Pinkerton is the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's not true.
Well, Mike, you know, from a, you know, as an actor, that you cannot play a negative on stage.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've asked Fernando to do is to pretend or to imagine that Pinkerton is this wealthy young man who is privileged because he has the money to buy the house and to pay for Chocho-san, and he keeps sending money, and he is friends with the American consul. We even said, you know, imagine that this is a young man, maybe his father is a senator, and has made all of those connections for him. So he is, in a sense, a product of his own upbringing. So his expectation is that this is just fun.
At the end, I don't want to give it away, but I'm going to give it away. Spoiler alert, in the end, she commits suicide.
Yes.
Because he comes back after having been away for an enormous amount of time. He comes back with his new American wife, and they want the child that you had with him, and you decide to give the child to them because it will have a better life. But you kill yourself in the process. Is she then not a victim, or is this a way to say that she has this is her way of expressing self-worth?
I guess, like Fernando said, everybody is a victim of own reason. You can say she's a victim of her culture, her background, because that's what she saw. She saw her father doing the same thing. And to her, it was the right thing, because it's more honorable.
You've done this a number of times with other companies around the world, but this is a production that is going to be markedly different because of the set, which we're going to talk about in just a moment with the set designer.
Mm-hmm.
Has that changed your performance or informed your performances in any way?
Right. I think I am allowed to do more abstract and more flowing movements, physical movements, because of the set and the concept. And I'm very thrilled about it because somewhat it's more artistic, less realistic, but that brings us to a next level of a beauty.
Right. Before I let you go, you've talked about the strenuous nature of this on you as a singer and as a performer. It's said that Puccini understood the human voice perhaps better than any other composer for opera. Do you agree? And if so, why?
Yes, I do, because the lines and the phrases that he gave us to each character suits exactly what we were saying, and it fits the emotion and that makes it even easier to sing because it's so clear.
I'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
That's Unalihu Pres Chocho-san, Fernando Potari, concluding excellently, by the way, his first English interview.
Oh, my. Thank you.
Who plays Lieutenant Pinkerton, and James Mina will stay with us. We want to thank you for joining us because we're going to move on to something we talked about earlier. As I said, the production of Madame Butterfly, which opens next week, January 21st, and runs through the 29th, is changing things up a bit. Both the sets and costumes have been designed by renowned Japanese ceramic master artist Jun Kaneko. But the stage of the Belk Theater isn't the only place you can see his work. The Mint Museum is showcasing his works right now through April the 28th, and some of his monumental sculptures have already transformed the plaza in front of the museum, and more of his works can be found inside. Jun Kaneko joins us by phone for the remainder of the hour. Welcome to the program. He joins us from Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome. Good morning.
And we're also, Good morning, Mike.
And we're also joined in our studio here at Spirit Square by Carla Hansel. Excuse me. She's the curator of the Mint Museum. Good morning.
Good morning.
And James Mina continues to be with us. When did your association, Mr. Kaneko, with Madama Butterfly as costume and set designer begin?
It actually started, I believe, 2003, and it took me 3.5 years to do it.
3.5 years, and this was the Omaha Opera, Opera Omaha,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, opened in Omaha 2006.
You're known throughout the world for your work in the abstract expressionist movement in ceramics and for your large public installations like some of the things that are sitting outside the Mint Museum, and also for drawings and paintings, some of which are displayed inside the museum. But Butterfly was your first foray into set and costume design, I'm told. You had never even seen this opera before designing the sets and costumes for it. You say you weren't even a fan of opera at the time. Why did you say yes to Opera Omaha, and what was the process? It took you 3 years. What was the process that you used to come up with the designs?
Well, as you said, I wasn't even an opera fan. I didn't know anything about it. I had a hard time why they came to me to ask me to design it. Madame Butterfly, that's a huge chance anybody is taking, coming to ask me to design something I have no idea about.
Had you ever done stage design before?
No, no. So I said, this sounds fantastic challenge. I like to have a great challenge, but I have to be responsible for it. So I said, give me about 3 months to think about it. And then at that time, I think it was Madame Butterfly's 100th year. I believe it was 2004. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of U.S. opera company was doing Madame Butterfly, much more so than normal year.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to go around to see as much as I can in the actual performance. I saw about 12 of them in 1 year. And then I bought all DVD available and then saw about 15 of them. And took me about 3.5 months before I came to the conclusion that this opportunity, I shouldn't miss it. And then I should be able to do a good job.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, I want to find out how you avoided being influenced by all these productions that you saw, because your set design and your costume design is very different from anything that's come before it. We're taking a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Providence Day School, hosting an admissions open house Monday, January 23rd at 9:30 a.m. for grades TK through 12. Information at providenceday.org. After New Hampshire, GOP rivals move on to South Carolina. Diane Rehman, her panel of guests, talk about New Hampshire and what it means that Mitt Romney was the winner last night and what the runners-up and key factors in that race dividing them all up may mean to the future of the Republican presidential race. That's in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. We're going to continue our conversation about the new and different production of Madama Butterfly, which opens next week at Opera Carolina, in just a moment. Stay with us. Thank you.
The presidential candidates are speaking their minds.
The president said that he wants to favor green jobs.
I don't believe a Massachusetts moderate is in a very good position to debate.
Join WFAE on Tuesday evening, January 24th at Winthrop University in Rock Hill for a public conversation on this year's election. WFAE's Mike Collins and Winthrop professor Scott Huffman will moderate this town hall style forum. Details and RSVP are at WFAE.org.
Talking about Opera Carolina's upcoming production of Madama Butterfly, Puccini's great opera from 1904, with James Mina, who is the principal conductor and general director of the opera. Here, Jun Kaneko is a sculptor, a world-famous sculptor whose works are on display at the Mint Museum, but will really be on display in the production of Opera Carolina's Madama Butterfly. He's both the set and costume designer. And Carla Hansel joins us. She's the curator of the Mint Museum. Since you didn't know this opera at all when you were asked to design the sets and costumes, and you made it a point of going around the country and seeing as many of these productions as you could, and you mentioned you bought several DVDs of this to immerse yourself in the opera, and I know that you listened to the opera over and over and over in your studio to get it into the cellular structure of your body, it seems to me. How did you avoid being influenced by what you saw on the stage in those other productions? Because what you've come up with, Mr. Kaneko, I'm told, and you can see pictures of this, by the way, on Opera Carolina's website at operacarolina.org, is completely different and really quite exquisite.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I was way over 60 years old when I was asked to design opera. And then when you are over 60, it's really rare to find, to have an opportunity that have no idea what to do with it. So this was a great opportunity for me, and I was so excited about the opportunity and decided to do it. But then how to do it is the question, because anything has to have a starting and then direction. So while I was looking at DVD and then went to see the actual performance, I realized music is the center of the whole opera. That's sort of obvious, but it took me a while to understand music must be the center of it. Unfortunately, visual part only has the opportunity to help music and opera. So it has to go as a part of the whole opera, and the visual part has to help what's happening.
Just as singers in the world of opera go from company to company and reprise roles that they are particularly well adept at, I think it as a money-saving device, mm-hmm. and because why junk the set? The sets travel from opera company to opera company, and Paul on Facebook writes he saw this set in the Philadelphia production, and he says, if you're not a fan of opera, this show will make you one. Kaneko's stage set is brilliant. His artwork is known around the world. From the point of view of somebody...
How much did I pay Paul to write that?
From somebody who deals in opera as a course of living his life, what does the set do for you as somebody in the opera world? What does it do for this production? What does it do for the actors and the story?
Mike, there are a number of what we call in the Opera House concept productions, where we have either designers or directors that come up with a new idea, a new interpretation of the opera, and they simply don't work because they go against the nature of the piece, or they go against the feeling of the music or the direction of the music. And what's exquisite about Jun's production is that, as he said, the physical production of the sets and the costumes and the lighting and the projections enhance and augment and complement the feeling of the music. And it's really quite extraordinary to have this merger of a contemporary artist who has a very beautiful but very unique artistic expression merged with this romantic piece of music. Mm-hmm. It is an extraordinary achievement, quite honestly, that we can appreciate as audience members. But really, when you delve into it, the achievement that Jun is really, really quite extraordinary. Mm. So what it does for me, Mike, is it helps enhance the experience and brings some very unique and new ways of looking at the piece, even for me.
I want to talk about how this set functions in the show and other things about Opera Carolina and their production of Madama Butterfly with regard to this set. But I want to bring Carla Hansel into the conversation. She's the curator at the Mint Museum. Put Jun Kaneko into some sort of perspective here in the visual arts world for us, mm-hmm. because he is known around the world. What is his unique contribution to the world of art?
Really, there's no other artist in the world that's working in the same way that Jun Kaneko is working in terms of being able to create such monumental ceramic pieces that have been shown nationally and internationally. He's in over 70 museum collections. He's had major installations at other corporate offices. His Buddhist heads were on Park Road. He's the inaugural exhibition for the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts Sculpture Garden was Jun Kaneko. So really, he's just masterful in terms of his vision and his technical accomplishment.
How would you describe his work?
His work, I think, is a compilation of ancient Shinto practices, also the ability to work in an industrial mode. Many of these works have to be fired in large industrial kilns to be able to get to that size. And then there's just exemplary craftsmanship. So it's vision craftsmanship, and then it's also tied in this notion of Shinto philosophy, mm-hmm. of connection of the sculpture to space, the space around it. And then he was trained as a painter, so they're beautifully, the surface of these sculptures are beautifully hand-painted, so the artist's hand is evident within the works.
Artists, I could be wrong about this, it's my impression that artists, not just painters and sculptors, but singers and actors and directors and composers, they have a style. If they have a body of work, you can usually point to a piece that you don't know and say that is a Puccini piece or that is a Kaneko work of art. So, Mr. Kaneko, I'm curious, since this you've done other operas since Madama Butterfly, but this was your first foray into this. How what you have done for the stage relates to the body of work that came before it in the artistic world?
The way it came to my mind about the initial concept for Madame Butterfly stage is just listening to the music. As I said, music is the center of the whole thing. So I decided not to think anything, just listen to music over and over and over. About 3 months, I have listened to Butterfly about 250 times. Every day, 2 to 3 times. That's full-time job for 3 months. And then, gradually, some ideas started to come out of my mind. And then I started to draw randomly whatever comes to my mind. And then looked at it, and then curated the conceptual direction, and then gradually it went that direction that ended up... Pretty simple design.
Well, you've done these very big ceramic pieces, some of which are 12 feet, 13 feet tall and weigh hundreds and hundreds of pounds. Yes. When you design a stage set, it's not just a pretty picture you're putting up there. There's some engineering involved in that because it's got to support people and actually be able to come on and off a stage. Was that a challenge for you, the engineering of the set?
Well, sure. The engineering part of it's any engineering problem has a lot of similar overlap. But for me, the biggest challenge was in opera, every moment it changes. Mm. The singer moves in the same space set, but whole visual composition changes. And then lighting designer changes. all lighting situation. That changes the visual situation completely. So you have to have a complete understanding of the whole flow of visual change.
And as somebody who works fairly privately on his own works of art that stand alone once they're completed, you've delved into the world of theatrical endeavor, which is a collaborative situation between all kinds of different artists. Was that a difficult transition to make? Because this no longer is just you by yourself. You've got to work in concert with other people.
It was a completely new experience. It wasn't that difficult, but it was a completely new experience for me to collaborate with so many people. The opera I'm doing now for San Francisco Opera, they tell me there's 700 people involved to make this happen. So collaboration is definitely new area. I mean, studio artists, what we do is we just take all responsibility, do whatever we want, and then just keep our finger crossed. If it goes good, it's good.
You can see some of the photographs of the set that will be used by Opera Carolina for Madama Butterfly, designed by our guest June Kaneko, on our website at WFAE.org. I've only seen a few pictures of the stage setting and the costumes, but I would describe it as the set as being spare but elegant, with strong lines and saturated colors, and it's bold and it's contemporary. I'm curious how you would describe it.
You know, it came out of listening to music. At the beginning, it was completely different. It was more realistic, and then Nagasaki Bay's background, and then some gesture of the traditional Japanese architecture house. But as I started to think, I just started to go very simple direction, minimize everything. And the butterfly, actually, at the beginning, especially, has a strong movement of the Pinkerton comes in, and then butterfly comes in, her friend comes in from one direction. So I started to draw that movement, and I ended up having that oval shape, and then lamp coming down from the stage left. I mean, stage right, and coming down to the house, the abstract house in the center of the stage. So it all comes from the listening to the music.
It's a great example of the old adage, less is more. Carla, the MIT Museum, since December, I believe, has had an exhibition of Mr. Kaneko's works, both outside and inside, and you're installing another piece outside, I think, Monday of
yes.
next week. The exhibit, it runs through April, and it's called Jun Kaneko In the Round. Why the name In the Round?
Right. Well, it's kind of a reference because sculpture is a three-dimensional medium, so you do view it in the round, and then also a nod to his skill in creating opera design. You know, theater opera is in the round. So we do have on view some of his drawings for the costumes, so that gives you a little bit of insight into the artist's process of conceptualizing the costumes. And then we have four of his Dongo sculptures on view in the atrium, and then this very large monumental piece will be installed on Monday. Mm-hmm. So that is very exciting because it's the first time that there will be a large sculpture in front of the Mint Museum on the plaza.
Wow. I asked Mr. Kaneko the question about if he could connect the style of the set design and the costume design to the pieces that he's done in the past that came before his endeavors in theater. I'd like you to do that because you have as a curator, you have an eye for that. Is there a stylistic thread that runs through both his work as a visual artist prior to opera and what he's put on the stage?
Mm-hmm. I would say that his work is pared down but yet highly patterned, so that that's evident in both his dongos as well as in the costume design. And, you know, the patterning is a way of, you know, connecting through space, kind of making things appear both two-dimensional and three-dimensional at once. So you can see, you know, within his sculptural works, you know, they're a very pared down, elegant form, you know, this rounded shape. But then the patterning that he's able to incorporate in the glaze really brings it to life, and you can see the artist's hand within that.
And, Mike, you can see the patterning is very similar between his ceramic works and the costume design particularly. There are the patterns of the costumes. There are some of them that look exactly like, you can, as you said, look at it and say, oh, that's a Kaneko.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
The stripes, the dots, the squares. Yeah. There are certain patterns that are he uses a lot within his artwork.
I only have about a minute left here, but it's Carla has mentioned Dango sculptures and the elements of Shinto, the Shinto religion in those sculptures, and the concept of attachment through space and the Shinto belief that all things have a spirit. Is the same true of your approach to the design of the set and costumes of Madame Butterfly? Are you thinking about that when you design those items? Mr. Kaneko?
Yeah. The space in between is as important as things around of it for me. In that sense, I pay equal amount of attention to the space in between the things, like a stage and in between the singers. And then that gives me the my concern with time element. Mm. And the music is a fantastic thing. It's like if you start thinking about sound and silence and the space in between, and in human history, how we use that element to come up with a lot of different kinds of music and then feeling. It's just amazing challenge.
Jun Kaneko designed the set and costumes for Opera Carolina's production of Madama Butterfly, which opens on January 21st, runs the 26th and 29th. His work is also on display through April 28th at the Mint Museum. Thanks to him for joining us, James Mina, and to Carla Hansel as well. Thank you all for being here.
Charlotte Talks with